welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. James, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, yeah. Thank you for having me back. I think number four.
Is it four, is it?
I think yeah, there we go.
And we've got a couple more great topics to get through at some point over the next few weeks, hopefully, to cover a bit more ground.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Dees. And we kind of put it on at short notice, so it's as unprepared as what I usually am, but I'm sure we'll get through it.
Yep, that's me, Sunder.
Well, before we get into the topic, how are you? How's everything?
Good. Everything's good. Weary. End of a long season. End of an under 15 season, which has had its had a lot of ups and a few downs as well. So last league game tomorrow. Then looking forward to a couple of weeks just to recharge the batteries before we go again for tournament season. Yeah.
It's been interesting this season, hasn't it? Obviously, I'm quite close with you in that team and stuff, and you know, again, a successful season overall, different to last season, but then some of the bumps that are faced, we weren't, collectively, as in the boys, parents and everyone, we probably weren't used to facing because of what had been so good before, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, this season, the boys are obviously another year older, they're teenagers, there's other focuses, other distractions coming in now, they're a year before the GCSEs. I think injuries have played a bigger part this season than in any previous season. We've lost a few boys long term, and others with, you know, 4 to 6 week layoffs as well. So they're getting to that age again, I think, where muscle strains and things like that are becoming a bit more prevalent now. So yeah, definitely been challenging, but overall enjoyable and successful. And maybe with a little bit more luck and you know, maybe one or two better decisions here and there on the pitch, we'd have been in a cup final and we'd have been in with a shout of the league, but it wasn't to be.
And that's like part of the fun of weather, isn't it, right?
Absolutely.
You can only control so many of the variables and, you know, that's what keeps it interesting. Brilliant. Okay, well, look, thank you so much. The idea of today's podcast is, I think it's a good one because, A, we've gone through another season, so it's a good chance to reflect back on the season as we get to the tail end of it. Also, a lot of experience as well from previous seasons,
Absolutely.
Both from you from playing and coaching at different age groups. But also, we're at the sharp end of the season, aren't we? For some, like the teams will be going to cup finals. They will be probably playing the last games to win a league this weekend, the next weekend, or whatever. Tournaments are coming up. So, you know, those bigger games sometimes, you know, create a even heightened environment. And heightened emotions.
Football's a game of emotions, right?
Exactly. So the topic is really kind of along the lines of what's too far. So just to clarify that, to make it fair for you, what I'm thinking in my head is, like, you know, what actions and behaviours would cross a line? Because I think it can be quite subjective. So, you know, what are the red lines? Is a no-nos, and then what are the bits in between? Where actually, you know, in your view, you might think actually, you know, that would be something I'm okay with, or that's something I'm not okay with, but other people might be. And I thought we could look maybe at coaches, we could just look at players and at parents and maybe other, you know, stakeholders. But I guess to start off, we would look at coaches more broadly.
Yep.
So my first question to you would be, do you think this needs a conversation? Do you think there's things out there? Is everything absolutely hunky-dory? Actually, do you know what? I think everyone behaves pretty well and generally there's not a problem. Or actually, do you know what? Maybe we need to clarify some of this stuff.
I really do. I think the dynamic of grassroots football is changing. And I think there's a mixture. You know, when I first started doing it 13, 14 years ago, the vast majority of coaches were dads who had their son in the team and they'd stepped up and they were taking the team. And that was across every level of football. And so, you know, that brought challenges with it as well. But now I think that the dynamic's changed and there's a lot of these teams who are coming in who aren't affiliated to a grassroots club, who are you know, potentially high subscription, and they're looking for the best players and they're about winning, and from my sort of experience, those coaches are quite young. They're mid-20s, late 20s a push. And I think that brings a different dynamic with it as well, and potentially maybe some challenging behaviours from what I've seen. So I do think it needs a conversation, but probably better governance as well, I think.
Well, maybe we'll come back on to what might have created some of this stuff with regards to some of the changes, because you're right. If you think back maybe just even 5-10 years ago, most grassroots teams, it was, wasn't it? It was a dad often, could be a mum, but often dad that was just jumping in and helping out. That did present, I'm sure, zone challenges. But now I'm thinking, like, a lot of the teams we play now, it often isn't a parent there the other side. It can be, but often it's also a paid coach that they've got in.
Absolutely.
As part of a subscribed monthly private academy kind of thing.
I think it's a different, you know, not in all instances, but I think it's a different approach, isn't it? I think some coaches are prepared to, they wouldn't call it this, I call it this, prepared to look at Wally in front of the boys because they don't have a son or a daughter there. Whereas I think, you know, if you do have a son or a daughter in the team, maybe you check yourself, maybe you, you know, you apply some sort of filter to how you behave because you know that, you know, your child is in that team.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally agree. Okay, well then let's go onto the topic itself then. From your experience, have you seen cases that you think actually that, for me, that's too much? That's gone too far.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can think of a few instances. So particularly one instance this season where opposition coaches, again, not from a grassroots team, but they crossed as many lines as I've known in grassroots football, from their language, their talking to opposition players, running on the pitch, putting their hands on opposition players, pretty much everything, shouting at the referee, swearing at the referee, aggression like I've never seen towards their own team. And these are 14, 15-year-old kids. And, you know, if my son was playing in a team like that and I got a single whiff of coaches behaving like that in front of the boys, they'd be out of that team within minutes. But that was... I mean, it was an extreme case, that one. But I've seen instances in the past where the ball's gone out of play towards an opposition coach and one of our boys has gone to chase the ball and the coach has kicked it away. And obviously, plenty of instances of coaches getting on the case of the referee, stepping onto the pitch, lots of different things that I think a lot of those are probably a red line. But... Maybe other coaches and people feel that actually that's acceptable behaviour. In my eyes, it's not. I think it's quite subjective.
And that's probably part of the problem, isn't it? Different people have different kind of views on what is acceptable. When you have these situations where you don't think they're acceptable, how do you manage that? And does that depend on different variables?
Yeah, I think it depends on different variables. I think there's a couple of things that however a coach wants to act to his own team is kind of up to him. And if he wants to, you know, have different boundaries than I would have with my own team, then that's up to them. I'm not really going to get involved with... Even if I think it's wrong, I'm not going to get involved with them. If it's the way that they do things, I'm just there to try and win a football match and that be that. When a coach, however, if he aims something towards our team, if there's anything I think affects our boys or is aimed towards our boys or disadvantages our boys, then that's a red flag to me. And, you know, I'm not someone who's going to go in shouting and screaming. But I'm also someone who's going to step in, I think, if people are what I would perceive as behaving wrongly towards our players.
Okay, let's try and narrow it down a little bit. So coach behaviour, things that, in your view, shouldn't happen. What shouldn't be seen on the side of a football pitch or at training, potentially. I know we don't get to see other people training, do we? That's the beginning of you seeing in the match environment, don't we? But things that you think that this shouldn't be happening, in your view. And I know you well enough to be able to say is that just because it's your view, you're not saying it's everyone else's view, but the idea is to get us thinking, right? This is
absolutely, you
know, just to get us to see if what we think is right and not right.
Absolutely. I think that there are certain things I think that should be non-negotiables in grassroots football, right? So the first one is coaches talking to opposition players shouldn't happen. After the game, shake their hands, say well done, no problem. Or, for example, if one of their players went down and, you know, with an injury near you, then are you okay? Do you need a hand back up or something? That's fine. But as soon as you start talking, I guess, negatively to an opposition player, that's a complete and utter no-no. Shouldn't happen at all.
James, on that one, I watched a game a couple of weeks back and I couldn't believe it. Like I was just passing by to watch a younger team play, but the older teams were playing, under-15s this was. And the opposition coach, he must have known the other team's centre-forward. Maybe they played for that team or something else. But he was just, every time the kid got the ball, he was shouting to his team. I can't remember the boy's name. Let's just call him Scott. He was saying, get on Scott. He's got rubbish first touch. Get on him. Press him. Get on his face. He's useless. And then this kid took a shot and missed it. His head's gone. Look, his head's gone. He can't shoot. Don't worry about that now. I couldn't believe it. And actually, that sounds really bad. I waited till the end of the game. So I wanted to see, and there was other things, which I'm sure I can't join the game, as join this conversation as well, that this guy was doing. And I thought, God, if I was the opposition coaches here, I would really struggle not to have to say something. And I don't think it necessarily helped the situation, because I don't think you could convince this guy that he was doing anything wrong. It was, I guess, what you might term it in quotes banter, but it wasn't, like, you know, it wasn't aggressive, like, but it was mean and it was kind of sarky and it was, you know, that's just the way he is kind of thing. Because, like, I was with the parents the other side and they were laughing and going, oh, you know, like, you know, I'm typical this coach's name. And I thought I couldn't handle that if I was things. And I wouldn't see it happened at the end. And at the end, the other coach just shook hands with the other guy and they had a little hug. Like, it was like nothing. He hadn't done anything wrong. I'm thinking, this isn't right.
How old?
Under 15s. A league game. And like, and as I was walking off, funnily enough, the team with the coach on it, the loud coach, I was walking, and the parent, one of the mums and the kid was behind me, we were walking back to the car park and we couldn't find the car park. And I said, oh, you know, did you enjoy the game? And he was like, he had a really, really miserable face. They won. And he goes, oh, not really, because they didn't play very well. And I was like, your coach is a bit full on, isn't he? And the mum just looked at me and I shook her head, like, as if to say, like, yeah, but don't even talk about it kind of thing. Mm. It just didn't feel right. But sorry, but like, no. To me, that, I mean, that's, this is, sorry, this is beyond, isn't it? This is too much.
You know, and this is where I think coaches need to step back and think, strip everything out of it, strip the emotion out of it, strip the, you know, whether it's 3 points or next round of the cup or whatever it is, and say, in life, would I talk and would I try and demean a 14-year-old boy or 15-year-old boy in any other walk of life? And I bet that coach would probably say, no, absolutely not, I wouldn't. If you're walking down the street and you saw a 14 or 15-year-old boy wearing a jacket that you didn't like, yeah, would you go up to him and say,
no?
You know, and this is where I think, I don't understand why coaches sometimes feel that they can behave like that in football in general, but particularly to children. It's a mystery to me. But
it was hard to watch, James, but also it was really hard to accept the fact that everyone else accepted it. Mm-hmm. Hence part of this conversation was like, I started thinking, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm just, like, maybe my expectations are just misaligned to grassroots football. And look, and like, they're not babes. I do understand that. But they are, you know, they're still young. And I think when they're 14, 15 years old, they often act old, don't they? We all did it with our kids, didn't we? You know, you think you're older than you are. But the reality, surely us as the grown-ups in the room is to kind of say, you know, yeah, we give you a license, and you lads push the boundaries, but as the adults, we're going to just make sure things are kind of done in a way that's respectable and right. But go on, sorry, I've interrupted you. But yeah,
and it's a really good point, because if you turn it round, those kids are looking at you as A, an example, but B, you're their coach, right? So they listen to you and they're influenced by you, and they'll take what you say on board. Generally, as adults, whether you're a teacher, whether you're, you know, someone's Uncle Bob or whatever, they'll be influenced by it. And if you're a coach having a go at a 14-year-old boy, he's gonna shrink it. Eventually he'll turn around and say, do you know what, I don't want to play football anymore.
Yeah.
And that's one of my other points, actually, on what's a real red line for me is swearing is one. Swearing in front of the group isn't for me. Whether it's done. Now, listen, I'm not an angel, by the way. The odd word has slipped out in the heat of the moment, but never a particularly offensive swear word. But I do think swearing in general is should be a no-go area for coaches of any group under 16s, basically, or under 16, should I say. And the other one is aggressive mannerisms as well, because I see, you know, and we've seen instances of this, coaches, hands in pockets, or the way that they're talking to their players really stood almost in a sort of arrogant, aggressive way, talking to players. I'm the boss.
I'm the big I am, yeah.
And they're just, you know, like face contorted with anger, or I've seen them pointing at kids to make a point. And again, I just think, like, what planet are you on where you think that it's okay to talk to someone else's child in that manner? And actually, again, go back to, in whatever other walk of life would you treat a child like that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't. And I don't understand why coaches think that because they stood on the side of a football pitch, that becomes acceptable.
Yeah.
It isn't.
I think they forget whose hobby it is, right? Like, we're there for the kids, aren't we? I mean, isn't, like, in the most part, isn't that the reason? And even if it's not, just say it's a commercial thing where actually, you know, the kids are paying to be there, whatever else. It's still their hobby, isn't it? You know, yeah. If you don't make it fun and enjoyable, what is the point? Whether they're 8, 15, doesn't make a difference, is it? They should want to be there. Now, I know it's not always easy, and you invest your time in it as well, particularly as a volunteer. But, you know, if you're getting paid, you should be able to be even more kind of calm and level-headed, because if you're kind of getting paid to be professional, right? As a volunteer dad or mum, you can get a few things wrong because you just help doing the best you can do. But if you're being paid, you're being professional, hopefully.
Absolutely. And you would think, you know, if some of these teams are run as businesses, right? And if that's your business, again, put it in the context of another walk of life. If you were a tradesman and you went to someone's house for a job, you didn't like them, you'll start swearing at them.
Yeah.
You know, and then expect them to come back and give you more business.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's one thing that I can't quite get my head around. But no, you know, and I've got a little list of things here, but for me, absolute no-no should be talking to opposition players in a detrimental way, aggressive, horrible mannerisms, and in general, swearing.
Yep. And what about things like refereeing? I'm going to say referee engagement, to phrase it politely. How much do you yourself, or do you accept an opposition manager engaging with the ref during the game? Where's the lines there? Because it does feel a little bit to me like certain games, particularly big games, and I mean, like, you know, knockout games, or you know, opposition for the league kind of thing, that stuff. That more recently, it almost becomes down to which coach can shout at the manager the most. Sorry, which coach can shout at the ref the most to intimidate and get some decisions their way, because the games are close, right? Because you've obviously got two good teams competing against each other. That's why they're in finals and semi-finals or competing for the league. They're decent teams, so they're trying to gain advantage. But I won't give you my view, but it feels like sometimes it's just, you know, which one can intimidate the ref the most to get the decisions.
Yeah, and I think that there's, again, I think, you know, we have some referees who were, we had a 15-year-old girl ref us a couple of seasons ago, and she was great, right? She made a couple of mistakes, but she's a 15-year-old girl who's learning the game. But I've seen referees shouting I've seen coaches shouting at referees who are 15, 16 years old. Well, that's completely unacceptable, right? I'm sure that referee hasn't turned up to purposely make a mistake or get something wrong. I think that, you know, there are referees who are I think can sometimes be difficult to talk to, difficult to approach, even if you have one have a sensible conversation with them. But then you can ask the question, well, should you be talking to the referee? Should you be approaching a referee? But yeah, I do think that, I think some coaches overdo it, and we've seen coaches go onto the pitch to talk to the referee, you know, if the ball's gone out of play or if they've given a decision, and I think that's completely wrong.
and just shouting out during games for every call? I mean, I've seen you, so you seem to accept this. Not accept it, but you don't. I'm not saying you like it, but you certainly don't react. It annoys me when I hear other managers shout for everything. You know, even things where they know themselves that it wasn't that way. Because they laugh about it afterwards. They're like, oh, yeah, but you've got to call it, haven't you? Like, well, why don't you just let the ref do his job? You haven't got to call it.
I don't know. I tend to, when I'm coaching, I tend to be more focused, I think, on my team and what's going on. So if we've got a decision that's gone in our favour, let's say penalty, or I think we had one earlier in the season where the ball went out of play, the lad played on, pulled it across the box, one of our lads scored, we thought it had gone out of play, but the ref gave the goal. I'm not gonna turn around and say, ref, you're wrong, but their coach was having a right go at the referee. I'm more focused on my players saying, you know, ignore all that. You just concentrate on what you're doing and we'll get on with the game. I think if another coach, for me, if I always think as well that if you're getting on a referee's back at some point, if there's a 50-50 decision, it's going to go against you.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I do think, don't get me wrong.
But you think that they recognise it and then they'll make the right call themselves in the sense of not getting influenced by it?
I'm not saying every time, because obviously some refs can get intimidated, but I do think that if you're a coach who's constantly onto a ref, and a lot of the refs in the local circuit will have ref coaches numerous times, some point, that's why even if I'm annoyed with the referee, even if I think they've given decisions against us, I'm always going to shake their hand at the end, because you never know, you might be reffing you again next week.
I don't have an issue with the refs getting things wrong. I think I've seen maybe just more times where I think the coach is influencing the game, you know, by the shouting. I think it's a little bit like that, and also the players, you know, gets everyone works up within a player, start calling for everything and things. And again, maybe it's one of those things that's a fair tactic and a fair approach in adult football, and maybe some think it's okay to have it in kids football. But you know, when you go to a game thinking it's not okay, and others do, that's when you can get these issues, can't you? Where you kind of, you know, they don't think they're doing anything wrong; they're just doing what they do normally. And I'm there on the opposition kind of thing, thinking actually this is not right, you know. And then that, obviously when it becomes, you know, a more important game, if there is an important game in kids football, but if it's a quarter final, semi final, final of the cup, and suddenly a goal comes from it because of, you know, they've shouted for a game, and suddenly they get a pen that wasn't a pen, you know, or an offside call wasn't an offside call or whatever. You start thinking, well, that's just come down because of the intimidation.
Yeah, I guess there's another one. I mean, I've played it a couple of times where coaches have been onto referees, and at half time, I've walked on and I've said to the ref, listen, ref, we've got you back. Don't worry about making the right calls. We've got you back if he kicks off. Knowing full well that coach isn't going to kick off, but just planting the seed in the referee's ear that actually these are the nice guys here.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, more than just be on a ref's back all the time, try and get him on side.
Yeah, get him on side.
And I'm not brilliant sometimes, and I do question referees' decisions. And we had a referee at under 14s, if you remember, who we went and played a team that were, after that, were removed from the league, actually. But the referee gave two penalties against us that was scandalous. And I'd had a bit of a pop at him. And in the end, I called our team over and said, it's up to you boys now, but we're being really, really unfairly treated. In fact, the referee had been involved in the other team's half-time team talk. It was one of those type of things. So I said to our boys, it's up to you. We can, but if you feel that we're being cheated out of a game here, I'm happy to take you off and we'll go. But they said, no, we want to stay, and we ended up winning the game. But
I remember that. It's interesting, that was a situation where I don't think the ref was intimidated by the guy, although the guy was one of those that was, you know, would have done that, I'm sure. It was more like, he felt like he was part of that team, didn't he?
Well, yeah,
he was literally like
I think he was. He wasn't a league appointed referee. He was one
so they got one in,
get,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was probably awful, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. What about on the pitch? What's your view about being on the pitch? You know, I know it's hard living aside. It's like a magnet in it. You're not necessarily on the pitch, but you're on the pitch. Should coaches be off the pitch at all times? Is it okay to be on the pitch a little bit? Is it okay to make your point on the pitch and step away? What half the pitch can you be on?
Yeah, this is a difficult one for me because I will quite often step onto the pitch, but not obviously not while the game's in play. But if there's a dead ball, let's say, for example, we have a corner and it's up the other end of the pitch and I'm stood in line with the edge of our own penalty area, I'll quite often step onto the pitch and I'll call someone over to give them a coaching point. I never go more than, you know this because you've seen me, but I never go more than 2 or 3 yards onto the pitch. And I'll only ever do it to talk to my players and to coach them, not to have a go at them or anything like that. But should I be doing it? I probably shouldn't, even though it's well-intentioned, even though it has nothing to do with the opposition. I probably shouldn't be doing it. I think if you go onto the pitch to get involved in anything, to talk to the referee, to even if there's a bit of handbags going on, if you go on then, I think that's an absolute no-no. You certainly shouldn't do it.
Yep.
But I think, as I say, I will sometimes edge on to talk to the player. A lot of the time when we've just scored a goal, I'll go onto the pitch to call someone over and I'll say to them, make sure everyone keeps their focus here. Make sure everyone, or it's 0-0. You know, forget the goal. It's 0-0 again. We go again. But realistically, should I be doing it? I probably shouldn't, because all that's doing is maybe opening the door for opposition coaches to think, well, if he's on the pitch, I'm going on the pitch as well. And maybe they go 10 yards on.
Yeah, exactly. And it got kind of filled us up. What about responsibility then? Who do you think should be or is responsible for making sure that us as coaches on match day are clear about, you know, where what we should and shouldn't do? And is it clear?
It's not clear. I know that there's an FA code of conduct. I think I know most of it. Do I know all of it? Definitely some grey areas. There's some grey areas in there, yeah.
Well, I've just printed it off, actually, and found out that there's mistakes in it. Literally, this is the most upset I could find. It says it's from the 23-24 handbook, and it says on the field, this is the coaches one, so coaches, team managers and club officials, respective code of conduct, and it says, we all bear a collective responsibility to set a good example and help provide a positive environment in which children can learn and enjoy the game. Play your part and observe the FA's respect code at all times. So let's start. It says that I will. And the second point down says, receive a ground ban. It says, we'll receive a ground ban. So there's obviously an error in their list. But it kind of says, to me, that sums up, you know, where we are with this in the sense of where it means. But some of the things on that, just so you brought up, so I mentioned that you can say whether you think these things are, are done or not. Use my position to set a positive example for the young people I'm responsible for. So a well-intended point. But again, it's a, you know, what does that actually mean? Show respect to others involved in the game, including match officials, opposition players, coaches, managers, and officials and spectators. Again, I think, you know, well-intended, but, you know, it is shouting a match official not showing respect to? Is it part of the game? You know, where are we with that? Adhere to the laws and spirits of the game. I think that's probably fair enough. Promote fair play and high standards of behaviour. I don't know if that's always seen, but again, what is fair play? Respect the match official's decision. Well, what is disrespecting it? You know, is just calling it or questioning it, is that disrespectful or not? Because that happens like probably 40 times a game, every game we've been to. So, you know, either of these, I just think they're just grey. They're just a bit ambiguous. Like my version of respect to match official decision might be different to yours, not somebody else's. So how do we know if we're following these code of conduct or not? To me, it's just a little bit too
woolly, right?
It's a bit too woolly. Yeah. Be gracious of it. When working with players, I will place their well-being, safety and enjoyment of each player above everything else. Well, that definitely doesn't happen. I mean, we've seen time and time again, there's no way these kids come off looking like they're about to break up in tears half the time. Encourage each player to accept responsibility. Ensure actors organised are appropriate. Cooperate fully with others in football. I mean, I just think you can interpret these things. You can do them to your own standards and probably argue you've done them, even if you're going against what it is, because it's not clear enough.
It's not clear. It's not clear. And the other thing for that is, how do you police it? And the reality is you can't, right? You can't police it. You know, who's gonna police and who's going to be the one that steps up? You could have club-appointed officials for every team, but realistically, what influence can you have over an opposition coach who actually sees things in a different way? And this is where coaches have to take responsibility and coaches have to be responsible, answerable to their own behaviours, I think, because you're right, it is set an example. I definitely think that those rules can be much more black and white, i.e. you absolutely do not go on the pitch. Even if it's to coach your team, even if it's to whatever, you don't go on the pitch until the referee calls you on. So if there's an injury, the referee has to call you on, like in adult football. Something along those lines could be,
yeah.
You know, that's, you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
There's no grey area there. You don't go on the pitch.
And define what you mean by like respect. Yeah. What is respect? What's disrespectful? You know, what are those? Let's be really clear about it. I totally agree. Yeah. And look, James, I know you can't police it because it would be almost impossible to have representatives at all the games, you know, and we don't want to kill it. We shouldn't have to police it. Well, what makes me laugh is you could get 20 kids today together, random kids who go to the park and play a game, and it would very rarely kick off. They would just have a game before they'd sort it out, wouldn't they? There'd be a little bit of argy bargy during the game, a bit of sort itself out. We've all been there as kids and done that, and it's been fine. The minute you put adults into it, you need to police it. It doesn't make any sense to me. But what about this suggestion then? If it was me and I ran a league, I don't, and I'm sure there may be issues with it, I would almost insist somehow that every game is videoed. You know, obviously VOs, you know, we've got VOs now, it's all fantastic, and you know, I'm not promoting VO, but you know, it seems to be the market leader, and what is really, really good. I'm sure there's other ways in which you could call games, but record every game. Both people record a game. Maybe the home team records it from the coach's side, and the away team coaches from the parent's side, and you've got your footage. You know, and then, you know, if you've got any questions or if you've got any issues, you send in your clip. So please look up 28 minutes because we think this is a problem, you know, and the league might ignore it completely. But actually, if they get in the same thing sent in, you know, from different teams about the same team that's a problem, then they've got some evidence to look at. So actually, we've looked at now five different clips and five different matches where we've seen the same thing where you're on the pitch shouting at the players, that's not acceptable. Here's your yellow card. You know, you're going to. So you haven't got to be there because everything's videoed these days.
Yep.
And I know we don't want to get away from the game and suddenly, you know, as a league. Secretary, you don't want to get like 40 hours of footage every Sunday evening to watch. But actually, you've only got to watch the 2-minute clip of the things.
Yeah.
And don't even watch the first five you get, or the first two or three. Wait until you get four or five saying the same thing. And then go back and look at all of them and say, do you know what? We've got the evidence here. We've seen that. And that's not right.
Yeah.
And we haven't got to be there. We agree with the footage. We don't care about context. Actually, whatever happened before, you can't do that. If you've got footage of this guy doing something or girl doing something wrong as well, then share us that. And then if we've got enough of that, we'll do the same thing. But there's ways in which we could be smart, use technology to actually keep an eye on these things and check behaviour.
I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, the majority have got VOs now, or access to VOs.
Absolutely.
But certainly when we rock up for games, if it's not us recording, it's the opposition.
It's very rare it's not a game being recorded, isn't it?
But everyone's got mobile phones.
I hold a mobile phone. Yeah.
And but even if you see a coach who's behaving particularly badly, then someone film him. You
just
don't even have to tell him he's being filmed. Yeah. Just go and film him.
Yeah.
And then send it in. I think that's a great idea. And the other one for me is a lot of these behaviours and or bad behaviours from coaches come because they're so desperate to win games, right? Because they want to win, like you say, whether it's a grassroots team or probably more often a non-grassroots team, I'll call them. But they want to win. So actually where there is bad behaviour, and as you know, thinking of one example we had this season where we complained about a coach, his behaviour was abysmal. And he got a ban, but he didn't care because this team had about seven coaches and the ban meant nothing to him. But actually, dock and points. That's what they should start doing. If you're, if you're complaining against and you're actually found that to be guilty, if you've got video evidence or whatever, then actually that's 3 points gone, 6 points gone, whatever it would be. And I think that would stop a lot of that behaviour because these guys are so hell-bent on winning and winning leagues that points would be a real big deterrent, I think.
I fully agree, and I completely agree there. But I can imagine the conversation happens around that. People spoke about that now. But it's like, well, you can't punish the kids. I think it's the right thing to do because actually, it's not you punishing the kids; it's the coach punishing the kids by the behaviour. So either go to a different team, you know, or sort the coach out. But I reckon that's why they don't do it because it's like, well, actually, why should the kids pay the price for someone else's behaviour?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. But I think it's a bit short-termist that because I think A, you'll never change their behaviours, and
absolutely.
B. You know, if a coach is behaving like that and a parent's looking at his kid who's investing everything to win a game, they win a game, then they lose the points because of the coach's behaviour. The parent's either going to take that kid away or have a word with the coach. Whether or not, you know, I don't know if you want to come on to leagues and FAs and my thoughts.
Let's do it a bit. So obviously we spoke a bit about, okay, where the red lines are, and it is a bit grey. It's a bit ambiguous. And obviously the FA's got their code of conducts for coaches, for parents, players, officials, with regards to the leagues and stuff that are kind of affiliated, who do you think is responsible for it and what could they do? Do they do enough or could they do more? And if so, what could they do?
I think the FA is ultimately responsible for me. I think, you know, even that FA code of conduct there that we're talking about is so woolly. Jesus, I mean, come on. These guys are paid full time to come up with this stuff. I could come up with that in 20 minutes in my lunch break. You know, they have to be the people who set the standards. I think the league have to be the people that hand out the punishments when they're not adhered to. And I don't think either of them do anywhere near enough. Our league will shy away from any difficult decision that it has to do, and it's really disappointing actually that, you know, you and I, again, look, we've got our faults, and I'm sure, you know, there's times where we come home and think, well, we could have done this better, or we shouldn't have done that, but in general we're pretty good and we try and set the right example. But you've got to be supported by your league, and you know, the league that we're in now are the worst that I've come across. The league that we were in previously, they were pretty good actually. You know, there's been a couple of occasions where teams have been in that league, and whether it's them consistently not producing match cards, whether it's you know, particular behaviours or whatever, I've seen them be removed from the league. But our league, the behaviours in the league that we're in now are far worse, and the punishments are just woefully inadequate.
I'm sure, like you, I'm on a few different like coaches groups, WhatsApp groups, whatever else, and I don't participate too much in them, but you kind of see what the conversations are. And anecdotally, it just feels like there is a problem. Like, I know we've got one league and one league's better than another, but it feels like across the country, this is a problem. Why do you think it's not dealt with? Why don't leagues want to embrace it? Even our league, why don't they want to do something about it? They just don't need to. The team's there anyway, there's nothing in it for them. I'm trying to work out why they won't want to make the environment better when there's a few things they could do. Because it doesn't seem like they take it that seriously. I mean, with the greatest respect, and obviously I'm not there doing that job, so maybe they are and it's just more difficult, but I can't work out why they wouldn't want to deal with some of these things and set a higher bar around behaviour and expectations of all of us, you know, particularly the coaches.
A lot of these people are faceless, right? That, you know, their email... you know names, you see names in the handbook or whatever, but you don't know who they are. And a lot of them are volunteers. So on the one side, and you've got to say to them, well, fair play, you give up your time, you're a volunteer, you help with the organisation, whether it's appointing refs, whether it's being the fixtures secretary or whatever. So I'm not going to knock volunteers for that, because, you know, we're all volunteers, I guess, when we do coaching, right? So you give up your time. But I do wonder if there's a bit of an apathy that comes with it if you're a volunteer. I just can't be bothered, you know, progressing this any further, or you know, I've got to get all the fixtures out, I've got to appoint referees, I've got to do blah 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 blah. Do I really need to know? So we'll just, you know, we'll either let this one slide, or we'll give them a warning, a written warning about conduct or behaviour. So maybe there's an element of that. Maybe there's an element that, like you said before, that you don't want to punish the kids. So that could come into it, but the way that the league police it and govern it is really, really poor. And for me, I think as well, I'm contradicting myself here, I do this a lot, but I'm a volunteer coach, but I give my all to it because I kind of feel that no one forces me to be a volunteer. So if I'm going to be a volunteer and I'm going to coach other people's kids, I've got to do my best for them.
Yeah.
You know, so there is that argument as well. But in that respect, I think, again, the FA, we've had an incident in the last few weeks where, again, I mentioned this team that we'd had particular problems with, and we asked in the return fixture if we could have an FA representative and a league appointed referee for the return fixture, right? And we video it anyway, and the league agreed to it and the FA agreed to it, and the opposition team are supposed to confirm the fixture by a Tuesday evening, and they didn't. They didn't confirm it till the Thursday evening, which just rang a few alarm bells, but nothing major. Okay, fair enough. It's not unusual. It can happen. But on the Friday, game's on a Sunday morning, on the Friday, referee pulled out, league appointed referee pulled out. He'd got another fixture that's come in that he had to prioritise. Okay. They appointed another referee in the afternoon. By the evening, he'd pulled out as well. So now you're thinking, okay, well, this, you know, this doesn't look great, but it is what it is. We'll go, we'll play the game. At least we'll have the FA representative there. less than 24 hours before the game, the opposition switched the venue. And of course, it's a Saturday, so we can't get the FA representative there now either. So all of a sudden, you're faced with all the conditions that we wanted, really, for the return fixture have gone. No FA representative, no league referee. So we decided, speaking to our club and our secretary, we all thought, no, we're not going to play the game, but we'll write a letter to the league and we'll get it rescheduled. Because actually, technically speaking, they can't change the venue less than 24 hours before anyway, right? Anyway, so we sent a detailed note into the league to say this is why we didn't play the game. They didn't even respond to us. They just gave the opposition the 3 points. Didn't even get a note back. You know, and this was a safeguarding issue. And they didn't even have the courtesy, even if they'd discussed it, debated it, and come to that conclusion, well, at least tell us. Tell us what your reasoning is. And they didn't even have the courtesy to respond to us. And this is why I get so frustrated with them. And this is why I think, to be honest, you know, you can talk to me about respect and safeguarding and all these things, but you talk a good game, but you don't play.
Actions speak louder than words, don't they?
Well, on that one, there's two things. Number one is, obviously, I know the situation. And this wasn't the reason for the podcast, because we had spoke about this podcast before this.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like this is like an opportunity to get this out, but it's fitting well. This team has history, has form, doesn't it? So it wasn't like there was an issue with just us and them, and it wasn't that big an issue, to be honest with you. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't great at all, but it wasn't like, you know, it was one that required, you know, some intervention moving forward for the next fixture, definitely. But they've had history with at least two or three other teams that
absolutely,
we're aware of. So
yeah,
it wasn't like we just throwing our toys at Pram and making a fuss about something. And second of all, then, the only real alternative would have been for you to take these players to go and play a game, a last-minute fixture, without a league-appointed ref or look the game. You know, bear in mind what happened previously and what you've heard about other stuff. How is that creating a safe and positive environment?
Exactly.
And you know, if I was a parent, well, I'm a parent of the kid in your team, you know, it all went wrong, I could be in your, so what are you doing, James? Why are you taking my,
exactly,
you know, it's on you, isn't it? You don't know. I mean, you've got great parents and you've got good kids there, so I'm sure it probably would have been fine, but probably it's not good enough when you talk about kids, is it?
Well, exactly. And you know, I could have gone over there at 60-70% certainty that everything was going to be okay, but ultimately, you know, with this team, we'd had a scenario where the parents of players in that team had been abusive towards one of our players. Could I guarantee that that wasn't going to happen? No. We also know of an instance where the team had effectively walked off from playing a game over there because the referee, a non-league appointed referee, was effectively not refereeing the game fairly. So could I guarantee that we'd go over there and at least it would be a fair game? No. Could I guarantee that the referee would protect our players if, you know, if there's hefty challenges coming in? No, I couldn't. So I thought, well, no, I'm not playing silly games. I'm not playing funny games. This is kids' football at the end of the day. And ultimately, look, at the back of my mind, and, you know, it was highly, highly unlikely at this point that we could win the league. But there was a 1% chance, say, that that we could have still won it. I mean, that doesn't count now because we lost last week anyway. But you know,
but
at that
time it could have been, right?
Yeah. But I
and also they were playing with something as well, weren't they, a little bit? So it wasn't wasn't a nothing game.
No,
the game we played before was almost, it wasn't a big game then, but we saw what happened in that game with the way they were acting. So you think, God, it can only get worse in these situations when it all means a bit more.
The reality is we pumped them with 10 men, 4-0 in that game. So they'd been desperate to beat us.
Yeah.
Right? They'd have been desperate to beat us. And I sent a note out to the parents in our team the morning after, and I just explained the situation to them quite factually, and I just said, because it had caused me a couple of or caused me a sleepless night, should I say, for half an hour or so. But you know, that, well, what will the parents in our team think? You know, would some of them think, well, no, we should have gone and played it? And I sent a note out the next day detailing everything and said, this is the reason I made the decision. And every one of them supported the decision and said, no, you know, points, it's not about points at this stage. It's about kids playing football in the right environment and not allowing Wallies to intimidate them or anything else that comes with it. So in hindsight, would I have made the same decision again? Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'll I'll take a stand against people like that because they don't belong in grassroots football, any football, but particularly when there's children involved.
Yeah. All right, question for you. If you had to rank how acceptable, generally speaking, coach behaviour was, say, 10 years ago, when you were coaching 10 years ago, just roughly, from, say, 0 to 10, you know, and just, you know, what would you give it of a score out of 0 to 10 for how coach behaviour was and the kind of issues and the things you might face now compared to then?
10 years ago, I would have said probably 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Because I think, maybe 6 or 7 out of 10, because I think more of the games we played 10 years ago, I didn't have a problem with any of the coaches and I thought the coaches were okay.
So 6.5 out of 10. Yeah. Right. And then today, then you might have answered the question already. If you had to score it again, I mean, it sounds like it's gone down.
I'd say probably
6.5 isn't great. Let's be honest. 6.5 is okay, but it's not great.
It's not
but
great.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, absolutely. I'd say it's probably 5 out of 10 nowadays.
Right. Yeah.
I do think, you know, if you think about the teams in our league, then there's a few rogue ones, certainly. But I think even though the majority of coaches are better than the majority of coaches are well behaved, there's some who aren't, but it's how badly behaved they are.
Yeah.
Is worse. Do you know what I mean?
So the 20% really make it 8% the problem because of the way they act.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, if you weighted it, yeah, that's why I'm getting to 5 out of 10, because I've seen things this season and last season that I didn't see 10 years ago.
Why is it getting worse?
Because it's not policed or there's inappropriate punishments.
But do you think it was more policed 10 years ago? Because I don't know whether that was the case. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure. I get your point, but I think it needs to be more policed now. But I don't think it was policed more before.
No, you're probably right, actually. I think you're probably right that the policing of it is just poor anyway, right? But I do think that it's the changing nature of grassroots football, which I know you mentioned before might be another podcast in the future, but it's the changing nature of grassroots football. Coaches are coaching it without children, with their own kids in their team. Some of these coaches don't even look old enough to have their own children, let alone have them in an under 15
team. Says more about our age, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's an element of that and just the changing face of grassroots. And I do think that with the JPL and with other nationals and all these things that have come into it. Now, the stakes are higher, right? The stakes are higher and people get more emotional. Everyone wants to be seen to be, we're in the JPL, we're in the top league JPL, blah, 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 which is a nonsense to me, you know, my feelings on it. But
it is more public, right? I mean, that's a good point, actually. Absolutely. Social media and stuff like that. In the old days, you might get your name in the newspaper, mightn't you? But you remember, like, years, like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
but now, you know, with all social media and online stuff, you know, everyone, you get the results literally as they come up. You could be even watching the game live, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
So maybe there is a bit more, publicity around this stuff, whatever nonsense it is, but there is.
And you know, let's not take away from the fact that, and I sort of alluded to this earlier, and I've been involved in football all my life as a playing junior, playing as an adult, coaching as an adult, and coaching kids football. And people behave differently when they're at football. And people think that football's an excuse to behave like an idiot. If you're a 25, 30-year-old coach and maybe you've played as a kid and then you've gone and supported your team and watched whether it's Premier League, Football League, One, League Two, whatever it would be, and then all of a sudden you're coaching at a grassroots level, you're taking that behaviour with you because there is no one telling you, well, that's not the right way to behave, or actually you've got probably not old enough to develop a filter at that point to say, hang on a minute, you know, because really you start to develop those things when you have kids, right? And
you see things a bit differently.
You see things slightly differently, and I just think people need to take stock of their actions. And I think some of the coaches, as I say, some of these lads in their mid-20s, late-20s, and they probably haven't got kids. And then they might have kids in the next few years. And when that kid gets to 14 or 15, these lads are going to be mid-40s. I'd love to go back to them and say to them then, would you talk to your lad now like you spoke to those other kids 15 years ago? And I bet the answer would be no.
Yeah. All right. Well, we spoke a lot about coaches, but it wouldn't be right not to talk about like the other people involved in some situations. So let's look at players and also parents and spectators. But players first. What about players, just briefly, their behaviour, stuff like that? I mean, have you seen a change in that? Better, worse? You know, how has that been? They've got their own code of conduct as well. I won't read it out, but there's, you know, it's as ambiguous as it is with the coaches one. But, you know, and they've even got one for young players and adult players, which I guess is probably fair enough. But, you know, is this an issue too?
I don't think it's players. I don't think, from my own experience, is a huge problem. You know, look, when our team were under sevens, eights, nines, the players on opposition teams never used to talk to each other, did they? There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
But as they get into the A's they are now, you can hear there's a few sort of insults traded on the pitch. The language is pretty poor on the pitch, but they're growing up, right? They're not doing anything any different than we did or other generations. I haven't had an incident in... I've never had a red card. I've never been involved in a game. I don't think... Oh, no, I have. Beg your pardon.
I think the fact it's only ever been one says a lot about where that one was and who it was against, everything else.
But, absolutely. But it's the only one red card I can ever remember being a part of as a grassroots game, whether it's
just to be clear, sorry, when you say you don't mean you personally against something, you're what you're saying, one of your players in the team, I just want to be sure you've been sent off in Jesus, James, what's going on?
No, one of my players,
but
you know, in the team that I coach now, or my older boys' team when I coach them, no, there was no red cards, and so I just don't think it's the kids, I think it's the coaches. The kids generally tend to be all right, they're there to play football, they want to win a football match. Yes, like I say, there'll be a bit of the dark arts, there'll be a few insults traded on the pitch. There might even be the odd hefty tackle.
But they're kids, right?
They're kids.
Yeah. And that's why it's important as adults, we're there to kind of just make sure that actually, you know what, they're allowed to be kids. But when things do cross the line, yes, they get rightly punished if they do. Yeah. But that's the ref's job to do that. You know, and we're there to make sure that we, you know, we support that and we're doing the right things, not trying to argue against or defend stuff, not adding to the problem. They're allowed to get things wrong. They're allowed to make mistakes, aren't they? They're allowed to push the boundaries. And if they do, that's what the rules are for, right? That's what they're there. So
absolutely. And you know, as coaches, I've seen scenarios in game and I can hear opposition players winding our lads up, for example, right? And I'm thinking, if someone was winding me up in a game like that, like, you know, that next ball, you take a bad touch and I'm clearing you and I'm clearing the ball out. And one of our lads might do it. But as a coach, I have to say to them afterwards, listen, don't be silly with your tackles here, because A, you know, you don't want to hurt anybody. And B, what if you get sent off and you cost your team? So you're actually, you know, even though you might be thinking, I'd love to smash into that tackle or I'd love to do whatever, as a coach, you have to step back and go, well, is it the right thing? No, it's not. So I have to give the right example and give the right message to my players. And as we know, that's not always the case.
Okay, well, and what about, I mean, I think on the code of conduct, it's actually done as spectators rather than necessarily parents, but I guess people watching the games often is parents, isn't it? But it's not always just parents. What about spectators and that stuff? How have you found that? Has that changed over the years as well? Better, worse? Is it the same? Is it a problem?
I don't think it's as big a problem as coaches, if I'm honest, but we have seen a few examples where it's been unacceptable. Absolutely. I remember a game earlier this season, actually, a parent running the line and one of our boys, who was playing at fullback, questioning a decision that the linesman gave. The linesman was squaring up to him, you know, and another parent had to get involved to sort of calm him down. I don't think our lad covered himself in glory. This particular boy is well known for having a bit of chat about him, but still. You've got a 14-year-old kid,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you know, there are instances. I remember years and years ago, an opposition coach telling me that they'd been to play a game and they'd won the game, and afterwards, an opposition parent had thrown their football bag into a little stream at the bottom of the pitch where they were playing. It's like
it's funny, but it's not funny, isn't it?
No. Yeah. So I do think it can be a problem. I have heard parents saying things to opposition players. It's just unacceptable. It's just ridiculous. Is it as big a problem as the coaches? I don't think it is. And I sometimes think that the coaches, the way they behave, actually gives parents a platform to think, well, if the coach is doing it, I'm going to do it.
That's my next question, really. Do you think that a lot of the teams that you play, you know, the environment that comes with them, whether that's the players, the players, everything else, is really, you, if you get to see what the coach is like, you kind of know what's coming around the corner with everything else. Is that...
Potentially, yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, you know, if I look at the teams I've been involved with, we have a good set of parents. They're not, I can't remember one instance where a parent has
caused an issue.
But they're good people, right? They're decent people. And yeah, I think it's a mixture of all the things that we've spoken about. I think the coach should set an example, and often they set the wrong example to parents. I think certain parents, again, going back to the thinking that for some reason the rules of society don't apply to football and I can behave how I want. But some people forget the fact that it's kids' football at the end of the day, right? It's kids' football. And there's a reason that so many kids drop out of football at 15, 16 years old.
It's not fun anymore, is it?
It's not fun anymore. No. When the coach is going to be shouting and swearing at me, when opposition parents are going to be shouting and swearing at me, you'd think, you know, if I walked into work every day and people started having a go at me, and then I got home and people started having a go at me, I'd start to think, well, do I need this?
This isn't right, is it?
Hang on a minute, that sounds quite familiar. Like
normal day.
Yeah.
Okay, and if there was one or two things that you could change to make this better, you know... You might have mentioned it already, but if there was one or two things you could think, actually, you know what, these are some easy wins or something I could do. I mean, maybe not easy wins, but these are things that actually would make a difference, and we could maybe move this bar from a five up to six and a seven and go in the right direction.
Yeah.
Anything particular?
Well, you know, like we said, definitely better guidelines and deterrence, punishments, whatever you want to call it. For that type of behaviour, certainly.
So a bit more clarity and more consequence for...
Clarity and consequence, yeah. Definitely. I mean, again, after that, you're sort of struggling, really, because you're down to what people think is acceptable and what isn't acceptable,
yeah,
right?
That's exactly
and
it.
I'm not sure... I do think that top-level football can potentially do more as well. You know, I do think I'm not talking about the Real Madrids or the Manchester Cities of the world or somebody like that, although, you know, potentially I am. But I do think that coaches' behaviour on the sidelines, I'm thinking of one particular coach at the minute of a Premier League team. But that type of behaviour, if you're a 25-year-old coach and you're watching a Premier League coach and you're thinking, well, he's doing that.
I need to do that.
Maybe,
yeah.
I can do that. And I, you know, maybe there's something around there. Again, you're talking about an emotional game. You're talking about, you know, at that level, the highest stakes. So you don't want to take that out of football by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, the reason I love football is because of the competitive nature that it brings and because of the emotion it brings with it. But, yeah, there's certainly something for me in role modelling as well.
That's a good point as well. What about coach education? Because I'm thinking now the courses that we've done, you've done level two. I don't remember this. I know we talk about coaching players and kind of creating the right one and things like that, but I don't know we talk a lot about conduct on match days. I don't think it's been covered much. It certainly hasn't been covered to the point where, like, you're clear about, you know, where the red lines are and stuff. Yeah. Have you had that on your coach education? Anything that's kind of...
No.
Try and improve, you know, as a technical coach or as a coach that can, you know, develop players. I think that, you know, to be fair, players have been a good improvement in how coach education works with the FA, but I don't think there's been a lot around maybe match day conduct and actually the importance of the respect stuff.
I don't remember any of it, and it's a really, really, really good point. You know, Scott, I coached for 5 years at a Premier League club or within their trust.
Yep.
And it was never mentioned.
Yeah.
Never once mentioned about how you behave on a match day. So actually, thinking it through,
it's mad,
yeah,
isn't it, really? And I'm sure that's no different to anywhere else. It's not like...
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not...
Yeah, digging it one place out, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's probably more that can be done through there as well. But I just think, you know, this is powerful, right? Social media is powerful. And unfortunately, the minority always have the smallest voice. The minority always have the biggest
voice.
The loudest voice. Yep. The loudest voice. So I just wonder if people listening to this, if you're seeing... poor behaviour from opposition coaches, from parents, and particularly within maybe within the setup that you're working, it's much more difficult to go and ask an opposition coach to stop behaving how they're behaving than actually making sure that you get your own house in order.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what where it has to start, right? That the message has to keep coming, that get your own house in order.
Yeah.
And maybe others will follow that.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. Okay, well, final question then. Is season end for lots of people now, and there are teams going to be playing cup finals, maybe playing, you know, for 3 points to win them a league. You know, we don't give advice on the podcast really, but, you know, if a wish, you know, what would you hope people think about those coaches that are going out of big games? You know, what would you hope that they would, how would you hope they conduct themselves? And if they do face challenges or they want to push themselves beyond their own, you know, what they would perceive as normal behaviour, what would you say to them?
Make sure it's about the boys or the girls, and the memories that they take from that are positive ones. Don't make it about yourself. Make it about those kids looking back in years to come and thinking what a brilliant day that was. Win or lose, they're at a cup final. Make it about them. Don't make it about yourselves.
Yeah, because you can ruin it, can't you? You can win and still ruin it by acting wrong or whatever else. So, yeah, it'd be nice if there was lots of cup finals played over the next few weeks and months where, you know, both teams rocked up and put the kids first, you know, and did the right thing. Let the kids play and see how the game unfolded, you know, and see what's right and what's there. Sit down, relax, enjoy it and see what happens. I know it's hard. You know, like you say, influence your team the best you can, but leave the manager alone, leave the opposition alone, leave the ref alone and see what happens. If you win it fairly, you win it. If you don't win it, then you don't win it.
Yeah. Win or lose a cup final, win or lose a league, whatever. Win or, you know.
If you competed for it, you've done well, right?
Yeah, exactly. But is it going to change your life at the end of the day?
No.
No.
And no one else cares today. That's the thing. No one else cares. I mean, when you win something, even the losing team, once it's done, you've lost. You don't. The only people that care about the trophy that you've got is you and your team. And that's okay. Well, that's okay. Yeah. Little tournament, big tournament, League Cup. After you've got it, nobody else cares apart from you and your team. It means the world to you as the coach. But literally, that's the only person it really means the world to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what a great day we had last year when we won the cup. We had a great afternoon. Won the game. The opposition were fantastic. They shook everyone's hands afterwards and said, well done. They were clearly disappointed. We made sure that all our boys went and shook hands with the opposition and, you know, consoled them or whatever. And then we all went afterwards to, we hired out the pub and we had a great night in the evening. Yeah. And, you know, all those boys, I think, will look back in the future at one of the best days, if not the best day that they had at grassroots football. And no one's coming away going, oh, you know, parents fighting on the sidelines, people swearing at the referee, etc. And it should all be about that.
Absolutely. And I think, not saying we were lucky, but I don't know how many games happen that way, but it's a big game. It's a big game for both teams. And on that game, I don't remember the opposition coaches trying to berate the ref or influence decision. I don't remember anything like that. It was just played and it was the players played out. Look, and they were a very good team on a different day. They might have won the game, but it wasn't influenced by what you did in the sense of influencing beyond the team or what they did beyond the team. Do you know what I mean? So it was a nice result. Obviously, it fell nicely to us in that way. But even if it hadn't, a little disappointed would have been, I wouldn't have been like, oh, they just basically shouted their way to that cup, or they just imitated their way to the cup. It would have been like, actually, they had the better players on the day and it came their way, which is, that's how it should be, right?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, actually, because you and I debated this quite a lot. We arranged that party in the evening and, you know, we were a bit worried that if we turned up and we lost, would it be a bit of a...
Because it wasn't a celebration fight, it was in a season fight, wasn't it? Let's be clear, it wasn't like we didn't think we were going to win it. It was a convenient weekend to do it. And it was like, well, let's do it at the same time. And even if we don't win it, it's a nice way to get everyone together and just say, well done for the season.
Yeah, exactly that. But, you know, my view at the end of it was that win or lose, we shouldn't take away, A, from the achievements that they've made or that they've done this season. But again, it's about making memories. So they look back at it and they think, well, okay, we lost the game. We're disappointed, but at least we had a good laugh in the evening.
Yeah. Fantastic. James, we've gone over an hour. Thank you so much for that. Was that all right?
That was great. Yeah, look, thank you very much.
Like always with the podcast, all we're trying to do is get people thinking. No one's telling what they should or shouldn't do. I don't know, you know, if I'm any clearer about this stuff. But, you know, if we can all think a bit more around, you know, the environment that we sit on match days and conducting ourselves, right, like you said, and get your own house in order and put the kids first. And if we can all do that, then maybe we do this bar up from a 5. I think it's a 5 at best, personally, you know, and it should be an 8 or a 9. We're dealing with kids and we've got to get there somehow. And the more we can work together in a positive way, then the better. So thank you for helping us. to shed a light on this a little bit. And
No, thank you, and cheers for the beer.
Well, yeah, there's more coming, I think, isn't there?
That is indeed.
Cheers, James.
Cheers, thank you.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.